Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for Thursday, March 21st, 2013. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. Also this half hour, we'll have cash grain analysis from Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing in Windsor, Illinois. In agricultural news, the Senate moved funding within USDA that would prevent furloughs of the nation's meat inspectors. We'll have that and other stories this half hour. Also, Todd Gleason will give us the early word on spring planting conditions. And meteorologist Peter Levitt will have the latest in agricultural weather. It's all on the Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural market reports on WILL are made possible with support from Busey. Small business is the next big business, so Busey offers solutions to fit growing business needs, from customizable lending options to succession planning. Busey, your dream, our promise.
Here are your last trades for this Thursday afternoon in Kansas City May wheat. 761 down 5 1/4. July, 765 1/2 down 5 1/2. May wheat in Chicago, 729 down 7. July, 727 1/2 down 6 1/2. May corn, 734 up 1 1/2. December, 568 1/2 up 1 1/2. May soybeans, these are settlements now, 1449 up 29 1/4. July, 1425 1/2 up 26 1/4. November, 1275 1/4 up 14 1/4. May soybean meal, last trade here, 422.70 up 8.90. May soybean oil, a last trade, now a settlement, 5042 up 58. April live cattle, 126.05, unchanged on the day. June, 121.65, down 25. March feeders, 134.95, down 15. And April lean hogs, the last trade here, 78.30, up 42 1/2. And those are your last trades and settlements in Chicago and in Kansas City.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
World weather meteorologist Drew Lerner passes this along. Drew says there is no risk of crop damaging cold conditions across the U.S. Midwest or plains relative to the wheat crop, despite market commentary and rumors suggesting the contrary. None of the crop has advanced enough to be hurt by frost and freeze conditions in the next 10 days. Significant snow cover will be present in the central plains and a part of the lower Midwest for the coldest areas. Freezes in the southern plains, delta, and southeastern states will burn back vegetative growth but cause no permanent harm to production potentials. The next major winter-like storm system to impact the central U.S. is still expected to evolve in U.S. hard red winter wheat country Friday into Saturday, with significant snow and some rain likely.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening. listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. Good afternoon, Dan.
Good afternoon, Dave.
I guess we ought to start with the winner of the day, and that would be soybeans. You had mentioned this morning a golden cross, that is the crossing of the 50 and 100-day moving averages. It looked like they happened on Monday in the May daily charts, and boy, does it honor it right now.
Well, first off, not everybody recognizes the 50 cross and 100 as a golden cross. Most probably recognize the 50 moving above the 200, but I view the 50 cross and the 100 in commodities here as a very important signal that the overall trend is shifting, and in this case, be shifting to the upside. And you can see today we had a big up day in soybeans.
Could it be that the market is signaling to us with the move that we've seen this week in soybeans, especially old crop beans, that the quarterly grain stocks report may have a bullish surprise in the beans?
Well, I think that's what it's all about. Cash beans are hard to find. Cash corn is hard to find. So for the most part, I think your traders are anticipating that USA is going to come in with some pretty low-end production or grain stocks as of March 1st. Now, the big difference, though, we have in soybeans versus corn is that the South American crop is going to eventually work its way into the pipeline, and it's going to take a lot of demand away from soybeans here as we move into the spring. But at least in the short run here, the lines are so long in South America to get any kind of inventory out of there that we are seeing some minor switching back to the U.S. For short-term needs. And China announced today that they were going to dump out a million to a million and a half tons of their reserve to kind of ease prices in that country until, you know, some South American inventory or U.S. inventory begins to come in and supplies that market a little better.
Didn't seem like they could get them out of Argentina any faster.
No, they've got a lot of work to do on logistics in South America. And then, of course, Argentina is basically a banana republic. I mean, farmers basically hold on to commodities as a hedge against inflation. And Brazil can, this is the time of year you always have longshoremen strikes. So it's been doing that ever since I think I've been in this business. So, until they can get their labor issues straightened out and get some infrastructure built, it's going to be difficult for them to pump out the needed amount of inventory that China is going to require over the next several months. So I think that's why you got to stay at least somewhat friendly soybeans, at least in the short run anyway.
So in the short run, 1449 today, or does that roadmap suggest we could go?
Well, for the most part, we've been in kind of a $14, $15 range since middle part of January. So, I guess what technicians would look for is some closes above this 1485, 1490 area to maybe as a signal that we're breaking out of a sideways pattern and going to maybe put a couple dollars on the bean market. Or if we would come down to the downside and start breaking down below $14, you could take a couple dollars off pretty quick and go back to $12. So I think that's the way technicians are going to play it. They're going to play the range. And I think at least for the time being, they're wanting to play the upside at least going into next Thursday's stocks report.
What does the technical action in the corn tell you?
I'm probably a little more friendly to the corn. The corn market has a bearish divergence that looks like is on the monthly chart that looks like that's going to fail. And the decline that we had off of our August high point now looks like maybe It could be a bullish flag formation, and that could signal potential for some pretty good price strength in old crop corn. What I'm looking at on corn, again, is the 50-day moving average is getting in position here to cross above the 100-day in corn on old crop corn. And I think that in by itself will is kind of telling us that maybe some of this old crop corn's got some rationing yet to do in it. We'll get confirmation on that a week from Thursday or a week from today.
You think we could go back to the November 12 highs?
Well, I think, corn has a tendency to want to return to the 50% level of any major move.
Right.
And in this case, I think you got to look at something around 760 would take you back 50% of the decline off of the late August or early September high point down to this December low that we had in the lead month early January, the lead month corn futures could go back to this 760 area. And I think at that point, depending upon what your cash basis levels are, you could be talking about some $8 cash corn in many areas. That should probably have some end users back and away from the market.
Let's turn our attention to the dollar, and we have rallied fairly sharply since the end of January. Market in the dollar, though, in the last week or so, except for a little bit of a bear trap down, has turned essentially sideways. What are you seeing in the dollar now?
Well, I guess until we take out the 12 high July, in late July 2012 or 2012 high of 84.10, you could be still saying that maybe this rally, right, what we're having right in here, could be a right shoulder of head and shoulder bottom formation. When you look at your monthly chart, you're basically in a long-term pennant formation. With the extreme low at 70.69, the extreme high at 89.64, and each high has been lower and each low has been higher than those. So we are moving into a long-term pennant, and I think you could probably stay in that pennant maybe yet for another year or two. So the Federal Reserve Board continues to want to print money. That is a weakening, have a tendency to put downward pressure on the dollar. But on the other hand, you see the problems they have in the Eurozone. We've been talking about that for a couple years already. My guess is that we're going to continue to talk about it because all they've done is put duct tape on the problem over there for the last 2 years. And eventually, I think the euro will be unwound. And when that's unwound, that could be a real bullish factor to the dollar.
Thank you, Dan.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises, and he is in Mandeville, Louisiana.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/FarmerView.
In agricultural news, the Senate voted yesterday to provide extra funds for USDA to avoid furloughing meat inspectors. In a voice vote, senators agreed to an amendment by Senator Mark Pryor, a Democrat from Arkansas, to move $55 million over to the Food Safety Inspection Service from a USDA fund used for grants to fund new cafeteria equipment at schools, as well as money for maintenance at USDA. Under sequester, USDA had planned to furlough meat inspectors throughout the country for as many as 11 days, which would have disrupted the meat packing industry in the process. The measure now goes over to the House for consideration. USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack says USDA will require farmers to pay back $151 million under the sequester and will get that money mostly by reducing the direct payments that crop farmers get, whether prices are high or low. Under the sequester, the agency will have to ask farmers to pay back money that they have received under the Milk Income Loss Contract Program, the Supplemental Revenue Assistance Payments Program, known as SURE, and the Non-Insured Crop Disaster Assistance Program. Vilsack says that about 350,000 producers will be asked to pay back small amounts of money. But since more than 90% of them get direct payments, the agency will reduce those payments rather than send the farmers notices to pay the money back to USDA. More shots were fired Wednesday between the oil and ethanol industries in an escalating war. The American Petroleum Institute released a study yesterday claiming the renewable fuel standard is irretrievably broken, a charge U.S. ethanol groups say is false. The study found that continued implementation of the renewable fuels standard from now to the year 2022 would include an $800 billion decrease in U.S. gross domestic product, a $580 billion decrease in take-home pay for American workers, a 300% increase in the cost of manufacturing diesel, and a 30% rise in the cost of making gasoline. The ethanol industry countered that the API's efforts are designed to stop renewable fuels from shrinking the market share for petroleum refined fuels. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. What a difference a year makes. Last season at this time, farmers were in the field, and by the end of the month, some had planted corn in the upper half of the Midwest. Todd Gleason has more on how Illinois farmers will find field conditions this season.
The drought, at least in Illinois at this time, has been washed away, says University of Illinois Extension agronomist Emerson Nafsiger.
We've had enough rain to recharge the soil moisture in virtually all of Illinois. If you look at the national drought map today, Illinois is mostly white, meaning there isn't much of a problem. And we've certainly had the rainfall in most areas. I still talk to people in western Illinois that say, well, when you dig down a ways, it's still really dry there and so on. That may be true, but most tile lines are running, which means that, you know, there are certainly our soils have been wetted in the top several feet. And we're going into 2013 without a lot of lingering concern. Is there enough soil water there? Is it fully recharged?
Given that, Nafsiger says Illinois soils were fully recharged a year ago, even if the month of March was dry and warm. The fact is, we wouldn't mind having the beginning of the 2012 growing season back for 2013.
We would like a planting season like last spring where it dries out enough so we can get the crop in good shape, but we'd really like it to remember how to rain after that. And if that does happen and we get reasonable rainfall, normal or even a little below normal for May and June, and then normal or above in July and August, we're going to look at some very good crop prospects again.
Nafsiger concedes there is little to be learned from last year and the drought that informs how farmers should proceed this year. This includes the population or seeding rate decisions farmers will adjust on the planter. His advice, do not turn it down.
Because corn population responses, for example, were fairly flat last year, or we often maxed our yields in the low 30s or even the upper 20s in some of our trials, that doesn't mean we should drop populations. I recently asked a group of producers what they'd do differently, and most of them said if they knew what last year was going to be like, and many said they would drop their populations. I think that's probably a mistake.
Today's hybrids can take higher populations, says Nafziger, something on the order of dropping 36 to 37,000 seeds per acre. He sees no reason to drop that back, nor, for that matter, to increase it. Population is not the limiting factor in most Illinois cornfields in good or poor years. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Joining us now with cash grain analysis is Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing in Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon, Matt.
Good afternoon.
Okay, Dave. We are a week away from planting intentions and quarterly grains stocks report. Here's a question I have for you. Let's say the report is bullish, either old crop corn or old crop beans. I mean really bullish. What will basis do that day?
Well, I think basis, if you have a really bullish report and you have a really strong reaction on the Board of Trade, lots of times, you know, initially at least, the basis tends to soften just a hair, just trying to see whether that's going to pry some out of the farmer's hands. But bottom line is, for long-term implications of basis, it would mean that it's probably going to get much stronger as we move forward.
I have dreams of $8-plus corn, and dancing in my head, is that a number that we could potentially see later this spring into the summer?
Yes, if we have a bullish report this next week, and some people are kind of looking towards it on corn especially, I think on both corn and beans you're looking at that potential, especially with the exports on beans. And so, you know, if you do end up with a bullish report, the bottom line is a lot of people are saying regionally we're awfully tight, and we're seeing that as an elevator. We see some basis levels, depending on who we're dealing with, that are awfully attractive. And so this time of year it's got to keep you thinking, what's it going to take to get us into the harvest, especially when a good deal of the Midwest is looking like it's going to get planted a little bit later than what we were last year anyway.
The sleeper could be the beans, though, because this little rally that we're seeing this week in the soybeans on the board, it might be signaling to us that when we say that quarterly grain stock report, there aren't any beans left.
Yeah, there's not going to be a whole lot. If we go ahead and ship everything that we've booked on the exports, obviously we're getting awfully tight. And anybody that's tried to source beans here in the last few weeks has realized that it's pretty tough to come up with them. And, you know, there's hardly anybody, nobody put any corn in the bins this year. And, you know, there was maybe a few more beans than normal put in the bins, but a lot of those guys have, marketed them across the scales last fall at $17 and $18, you know. And it's pretty tough not to do that. And so moving forward, there's just not a whole lot of beans to be sourced anywhere.
What are producers saying about prices they would like? If they do have beans left, not a lot out there. There's probably some gambling stocks out there.
Yeah, I mean, kind of the running joke is that we've had several shots at $15, you know, and guys haven't taken them. And I think that if a guy gets another shot at $15, if he's passed on that a few times, he's probably not going to go ahead and move, especially on those gambling bushels. And, you know, to be honest with you, Dave, if I knew what price that would go ahead and get them out of their hands, I'd probably be smarter than most guys, because it's tough to tell when a farmer's going to go ahead and let go of them, especially on the gambling bushels, because anything can happen this year as tight as we are.
What about your prices today, Matt?
We're looking at cash corn prices $7.51 and fall would be $5.44. Cash beans $14.70 and fall $12.45.
Thank you, sir.
Yep, thank you, Dave.
That's Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing, and he is in Windsor, Illinois. In 2 minutes, I'll look at agricultural weather with meteorologist Peter Levitt. It's National French Bread Day. It's also California Strawberry Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1869, Albert Kahn was born, a German-American industrial architect. He is considered by many as the father of modern factory design. He was responsible for the design of Detroit's first large auto plants for the Packard Motor Car Company. Kahn also designed Ford Motor's famous Highland Park plant, where the Model T was produced. In 1915, Frederick Taylor died, an American inventor and engineer. He is known as the father of scientific management. He introduced a scientific approach to time and motion studies. In 1994, due to bad harvests, there was a shortage of Japanese-grown rice. Japan's imperial palace began serving royal meals to the emperor and empress with rice grown in the U.S., China, and Thailand. And in 1999, Bertrand Piccard and Brian Jones landed in the Egyptian desert, having completed the first around-the-world hot air balloon flight. According to the BBC, they carried fresh food, including bread, cheese, and pre-cooked steaks, to last for 6 or 7 days, after which they made do with dried foods such as cereals and powdered milk. The flight began in the Swiss Alps and took 19 days, 21 hours, and 55 minutes. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
This SOC and Commodity Report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us for a look at agricultural weather is Josh Dar of Chesapeake Energy. He is in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon, Josh.
Hey, Dave, how are you on this chilly spring day?
It is indeed chilly, that's for sure. Thanks for filling in on very short notice. It's much appreciated.
Oh, our pleasure.
Tip of the hat to you. I guess NOAA came out with their long-range forecasts today.
They did. You know what? I haven't even seen them yet, so I don't know what they say. But it is that time of the month when NOAA releases their monthly outlooks for the summer, and certainly one of the main drivers that the seasonal forecasting you look at as you get later in the spring and the summer is trend. And I know the NOAA forecasts usually highly rely on trend, which we've had warmer summers as of late, and the drought continuing to be entrenched across the northern plains. Those are factors which are likely feeding, if I had to take a guess, a warmer look for the summer across a good portion of the central eastern U.S.
Warmer and wet, I think, is the NOAA word for right now.
Interesting, yeah. It's, you know, the way we think about seasonal forecasting here is that there are certain things that happen over the course of, March and April, particularly out in the Rockies. We like to see how wet or how dry versus normal the Rockies are as the springtime develops, and then that's where heat generally emanates the plume out across the plains in the Midwest as we get deeper into summer. So we've heard of some forecasts out there. So far, we like to take a bit of a longer view, accumulate data through the spring, and then offer a view as we get later into May.
So let's turn our attention to the trend, which has been cool and wet. When you look out at things that might be clues that could tell you that the trend is changing, what are you looking for?
Great question, Dave. And what's been driving this exceptionally cold end to the winter across much of the central and eastern U.S. is a very strong ridge of high pressure across Greenland. That has been in place since mid-February. It looks to last as we get into the first days of April. But then generally at this time of year, those features tend to start to break down. That starts to bring warmer conditions. And if we had to call we break April into thirds, what third of April looks most likely to have a break towards warmer conditions? Middle of April looks to be the third of the month right now that we would lean our bias to.
Something about ocean oscillators, too?
Well, certainly the oceans can play a role in that view, and we have a warmer-than-normal Atlantic. What's happening in the tropical Pacific right now, it's basically a neutral situation, not a La Nina, not an El Nino, which you could certainly use that particularly for precipitation forecasting. And thus, at least as we look out towards April, we think the start of the month, which will still be very much like it is today outside, will be a far cry from what the end of the month could look like. When the pattern snaps in April, it looks like it could snap rather abruptly and sharply to a much warmer regime.
Thank you, Josh.
All right, Dave, have a good one.
You too. That's Josh Dar of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. That is today's Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey.